Welcome to this brand new episode of the Marketing Technology Podcast. This podcast is hosted by Mark van Horik and myself, Elias Krum. We're both from Marketing Guys in the Netherlands. Welcome, Kenny Klein from Barband on the Marketing Technology Podcast. Great to have you here.
Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
So together with me sitting here, Mark, my co-host, and we are looking forward to hear your story because that's quite a story you have there, Kenny. Could you elaborate a little on your background and the ventures you started the last years?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm Kenny Klein, based out of Brooklyn, New York, one of the founders of Barbend, which is a website focused on strength sports. Barbend was really spun out of one of my other companies, Jack Media, where we have done a variety of things, everything from SEO consulting to building our own web properties, which we now still run and operate across various spaces. But Barbend really came from my experience with SEO and combined with one of my other founders, his experience in the strength world, where he felt the content was really underserved for a very passionate audience. And when we say strength sports, we say Olympic weightlifting, powerlifting, strongman competitions, and CrossFit or functional fitness athletes. So him and I, together with our third partner, Joe Auer, started Barbend about 3 years ago. And for a variety of reasons I think we can discuss today, I ended up being quite a success. And I think we still have a lot of room to grow from this point on too. So we're really excited still about the site.
So where are you now with Barbend? Online, so speaking in online figures or maybe the brand recognition, et cetera. Because we are located here in Europe, I'm not a weightlifter myself. You might have seen that on pictures, but you know, it's like, so from your perspective, where are you now? How did you come where you are now, and what's your goals for the next year?
Yeah, so we're actually pretty big in Europe. A lot in the UK and Eastern Europe, but it is a very niche demographic. So if you're not into weightlifting, you probably haven't heard of us. And by design, we really started focusing on this niche just because we knew they were a very passionate audience that didn't have enough of the content that they want. And it's like a lot of sports where they'll just devour anything high quality that you'll give them in terms of content. So we started 3 years ago just with that in mind. We had one writer. I was running kind of the technical and the SEO and the digital strategy side. From the get-go, we were very popular just because we are covering a lot of these events and a lot of this athletes in our sports in a very professional way, in a very comprehensive way. We had great photos. The site looked great. We implemented a lot of features early on. We got into Google News and implemented AMP when it was, you know, a month old. We implemented Facebook Instant, which was really big for us, in its first couple months when it was available. So it was a combination, I think, of what got us to early success, where it was just content that people wanted and we delivered it in a really seamless way on the web. And beyond that, there wasn't too much strategy. It was just those two things together. And I'd say our first couple months, we jumped right up to over 100,000 visitors a month, just doing that strategy. At this point, a couple of years later, our strategy has definitely evolved. Our team has evolved, but we're at 2 million visitors now and hoping to grow that substantially over the next year.
2 million visitors a month.
A month, yeah.
Wow.
Okay, but you started without a strategy. So what was it, pure luck, or was it you struck a chord that nobody else had found at that moment?
I think it was really the quality of the content for an underserved audience. And that was our strategy, was to serve these people. You know, my company, Jack Media, looks at my kind of parent company, looks at many, many different niches to see, hey, who's really excited about something in a big group and who is and do they have the content that they want? And a lot of times the answer is no. It's becoming harder and harder to find those things, but we've looked at everything from you know, knitting to MMA to what else? I mean, our other industries are smart home now and sleep and those types of things. So we look at all these areas, and if you just provide great content for these audiences and deliver it in a good way and find the audience, then you're going to have success. But Barbend, we were all surprised at how quickly it took off. We just kind of didn't anticipate how hungry this audience was for this type of content.
So what kind of content are you talking about? Because there's all kinds of content. There is a content overload, maybe niches that don't have all these content types yet. But still, I would say if we want to have content, there is an overload. You can have your smartphone showing all kinds of stuff on Instagram. We have Facebook. There's all kinds of white papers, websites with Pinterest, whatsoever. What kind of content specifically are you referring to?
So we started with just written content, but news articles. So written about events or about athlete accomplishments in a very professional way. And going out there, getting quotes from people, which really isn't very common in this space, kind of treating it like journalism was our initial foray into the content. People just loved that. They really loved, it was easy to get comments because no one had called these big athletes or big, you know, people in the space and asked for comment before. So they were happy to do it. And it ended up being a really engaging experience. And since then we've evolved. We kept going with the written, but we do a lot of evergreen content. So we'll do weightlifting tips. We'll do, you know, nutrition coverage, and athlete interviews, that type of thing. We've also expanded heavily into video, really looking at YouTube as its own search engine. So we'll do product reviews on there, as well as now training tutorials for those, kind of filling in those written articles that we started writing a couple of years ago for tips, and even bringing the news onto the video, which has been very, very well received. We just did that in the last month, and more talking about like event predictions and coverage, that type of thing, but on video form has been very well received.
Well, so you're making it sound like it's luck, or you hit the right button there, but there must be some kind of good feeling or maybe a strategy behind it. So how would people that today are in a niche and they would like to stand out from the crowd and get those visitors on their channels, how would you help them, or how would you advise them to find the right type of content? Because you're talking about YouTube, written content, maybe those nutrition lists where you put them in, maybe you're giving them even menus or whatsoever. How do you define, how do you let people define their ultimate content channels?
Yeah, we're very, very heavy into keyword research. So that drives a lot of the content that we make, especially when we're talking about evergreen content. And there are a number of tools that we rely on, you know, multiple times a day. We're in there analyzing the articles and why were they successful and where they were delivered. So two of my favorites are, one, if you're starting out, Uber Suggest by Neil Patel is great. And if, which you can go in there and you can type in a keyword and see who else is ranking there and how competitive it is and what search traffic there is for it. Mm-hmm. And then the other, once you really get going, the most valuable too is really Webmaster Tools, a Google tool, because, and I think that's the most underused tool in digital marketing today, because it's just filled with so much wonderful information and I never hear anyone talk about it. You know, I spend half my day in there really going around and because a lot of our traffic now is SEO, going in there and seeing what the opportunities are and what we're taking advantage of and what they're not is essential. If you're targeting SEO traffic, Google wants to rank you for certain things and not for other things. And so if you look in Webmaster and see, hey, what are we on the second or third page for kind of by accident? If you write a more specific article, it's the easiest way to bump yourself up to page one because Google already likes you for that content, but maybe you haven't delivered quite the right article yet. And so we spend a lot of time writing specific content based on those search suggestions with a lot of SEO success following that.
Kenny, in the early stage, did you also rely on advertising, or was it purely based on the power of the content and the related keywords that you got your traffic? Or did you have to rely on, in the beginning, online advertising, like Google Ads or something like that?
Yeah, at the beginning, we did very, very little advertising. We did test it, mostly Facebook ads. And we saw some good results, but as many have said before me, I'm sure, building a big audience on Facebook isn't that useful these days, because you just have to pay to see them again. So our page has 70,000-80,000 people likes on it at this point. And we'll put up a post and some of them will get 2 likes or something. And so it's just not an effective tool for building. And we kind of, that started really around the time we started Barbend is when that started to change. So we did a bit of paid advertising, but very, very low. I'm talking, $10 a day for the first 3 to 6 months just to get the general word out there. And then after that, we cut it and it was all entirely organic success. But one thing that's also underrated for many is we got into Google News, which is a big driver of traffic as well. And so that's been a reason for our success as well. And optimizing news articles for Google News is a way to get a lot of traffic early on as well.
So we get a lot of questions about Google News because a lot of website owners don't seem to be able to get into Google News.
Mm-hmm.
Can you, let's say, open that box of Pandora for us and explain listeners what could help to be on that, to be mentioned on Google News?
Yeah, these days it's really, really tough as Google's clamping down on the fake news and all that. 3 years ago when we applied with Barbend, it was kind of simple process. We got it in right away, no questions asked. But we've been applying with some other properties over the last couple of months, and it's become very, very difficult. So we hired a consultant to tell us exactly what to do. So I have the exact answers for listeners. And a lot of it just comes down to two things. One, the quality of the content, where the news has to be very, very professional and objective and no opinions and clearly laid out as a news section on the site. Mm-hmm. Meaning like if you go to a news article, and it's not a news site, especially that's where people run into trouble. Then we even have a special nav bar just for the news site. So if you show up on a news article, you only see other news options on the website. So that's important, kind of creating a news hub. And two, in SEO, there's a term EAT, which is all just about knowing who is behind the content. And so we applied that to Google News as well, where, we're just a website. There's no reason we should have, our address or our phone number or multiple emails on the about page, but we just put every bit of information a site possibly could put on those about pages, including that phone number. Like that seems to be really important, through multiple sites that we put on. And, we have a Google number and we don't have anyone that really answers it, but it does go to our inbox and we check it. That seems to be very important as well. So those things combined can get you into Google News these days. But even then, we've applied multiple times with our most recent properties with little tweaks to get in. And we always do get in, but it's been a very difficult process over the last 6 months, especially.
But being a difficult process, and that it's a difficult process, it must be worthwhile to do it because, as you stated earlier, a lot of your traffic came from Google News. Can you share some info on that, or is that confidential? So how much traffic percentage-wise would you get from news, for example?
Yeah, so early on, it was probably 70%, I would say, of that 200,000 number. Wow. The other rest was maybe from social and social, Reddit, Facebook, that type of thing. Mm-hmm. But it was a lot of traffic. And what's powerful about Google News is Google's really pushing it. And so you might rank, if you write an article about a big name athlete, you might be be number one for his name for a couple of days. Or if you write about an event, you might be number one for that for a couple of days, especially if there's lower competition, like there was in our industry. So we saw a lot of success where it's like Hafþór Bjornsson, who is the mountain in Game of Thrones, you know, people search him like crazy, a lot of because he's in Game of Thrones, but also he's a great strongman competitor. So we would write about his strongman feats, lifts he did or competitions, that type of thing. And we'd rank number one for his name in Google News and just be flooded with traffic because of that.
Cool. So I think we hit a complete new topic because we've never talked about Google News before. And it's basically, if you're saying it's so big a percentage of your daily traffic for a news website, I think it's very important for site owners to take that into account. Coming with that growth, and you were saying you're growing from 200,000 to 2 million, so you're 10 times as big now as you were 2 years ago, 3 years ago. How does that affect your website? So is it, did you make any changes to the website, both from technical but also from process related processes on the website?
Yeah, the big thing is after 3 years, we've accumulated a lot of content. And so early on, it was a pretty simple design, pretty lightweight experience. And, you know, since then, we've got maybe 5,000 articles on the site. Some of them are old news articles, which you don't necessarily need to find. But a lot of that is content we want people to be able to navigate to. So we spent a lot of time redesigning the website so that our content can be found, number one, and people just have a good user experience. But number two, just making it look great, making it really, really fast, making it a good professional experience so that the Barbend brand continues to grow. And I think that professional experience is important as people think about a news source and a source that they trust. And a lot of our competitors, interestingly enough, in this strength sports space don't really, they don't have bad websites, but they don't have great websites. And so we aim to be the best web experience on the web. And I think, you know, in my opinion, we've done it, but I'm obviously biased. So, but we do spend a lot of time thinking about the user experience and the design and all of that. And I've implemented a lot of those changes. Even the last few months, we've done a whole rebuild on the back end, optimizing for site speed, and have really improved that over the last month and have seen some good gains from that as well.
Yeah, site speed is a very important thing, especially now that Google's going through the mobile first thing. It's very important also not to have good page speed on your desktop, but also on your mobile version.
Exactly.
A curious question, because if you got such a growth, one of getting them to you is one thing. Maintaining them is another thing. What do you do to keep them engaged with Barbend?
So our other favorite thing is email. We're really big into email, and we try not to be annoying. We send a weekly email with some of our best stuff, in addition to, you know, the occasional promotion here and there. But that's our two-tiered strategy, where we get people to the site via Google News or via SEO at this point, a bit of social and referrals, but then we want to keep them engaged with the brand by getting their email and following up with them. And we provide a lot of just free quality content. So we view it as just a value add, where our open rates are really good. Engagement seems to be really good because we're not selling anything. We're just, most of the time, we're just trying to provide content that you kind of said you were interested in. So that's our favorite way to keep people engaged with the brands. And, you know, as SEO or even Google News algorithm changes, our traffic does waver up and down. The overall trend is up, but month to month, who knows? But email is one where it's always very consistent, keeps growing, and you have total control over that list. So you can have a little more predictability around the success of that list.
And of course, one of the big questions, you're on the Marketing Technology Podcast. What kind of tools do you use to keep them informed via email? Do you use a marketing automation platform, or have you got an email marketing software?
Yeah, so my favorite software is Drip. That's the one that we use for all of our sites. Because we do all the basic stuff, the broadcasts and whatnot on there, but also setting up, we will set up some automatic campaigns dependent on where they sign up on the site. So just to tailor contents more specifically to the reader based on where they signed up, is important for us. And so Drip is my favorite one to use for that. I like it because it's not as complicated as something like Infusionsoft. And not as powerful, but it does all the things that I want to do. And it's pretty, has a good user experience, I think, as well, as far as email softwares go. So I've been using Drip the last year or so, and been very happy with it.
Just for to be clear on, because they look a little bit like, you're talking about Drip, not Drift.
Drip, yeah, with a P at the end.
Yeah. Because Drift is also a way to get engaged with your audience, but that's chatbot based.
Right. We haven't done much of that, but it's on my to-do list to have a look at.
Well, we can say that it's very intriguing and interesting.
Yeah, it's all these. The nice thing about this whole movement within marketing technology is that we tend to communicate tailor-made with all kinds of visitors and email subscribers. And it needs to be a good experience. As you said, on the website, you need to have a good experience. Same happens with email communications and with chatbots, etc. So since this is a pretty new field, it's always challenging to have the right playbooks or flows or whatever you want to call them there, because what you're saying about Drip, where you have multiple touch points on the websites, which leads to multiple Drip campaigns. You would also have those in chatbots, right? So depending on where people came from, what kind of questions they have, what kind of, are they returning visitors, new visitors, customers, members of the platform whatsoever, that all leads to different playbooks, as they call them within Drift. So it's not complicated, I would say, but it's a lot of work to do that, but it leads to a lot of conversions.
Organizational marketing, as they say. Nice. So coming back to Drip, so you use this platform to keep the engagement with your audience. Are there other tools that you say that are essential to get and maintain the success that you've got with Barbin?
I think, I'm really excited about the next stage where we have monetized mostly with ads and sponsored content. And I think our next level engagement is going to be delivering a higher quality experience to our users. And so we're looking at a lot of tools, calculators, and online courses that we can provide, and just building the experience around that. There are many, many tools that we're probably going to incorporate, many that we're looking at now when it comes to, user management and all that type of stuff, navigating the back end, integrating the email, integrating the pop-ups, sharing, all that type of stuff. We're looking at it now. And we view it as the most essential way to engage our most active users is building a great experience on the back end. And there'll be some charge often for that as well, which helps with monetization, of course. But we aim to really deliver a lot more value than we're charging for. And I think a lot of those tools and getting people, working out or learning to work out, people need the encouragement and need to be pinged once in a while to stay on track. And so a lot of the tools we're looking at do that, but we haven't really come to a conclusion which ones we're going to be integrating.
So that's a nice reason to have you on the podcast again in a couple of months to hear what you've chosen and which ones, what your experiences are. For now, you know, I'd like to thank you very much. I think we gave a lot of insight to the listeners of the podcast to your strategy, the tools you use, some tools that you don't want people to miss out on, like the ones from Google you mentioned, like the drip for email that you're using. Thank you very much, Kenny, for being on the show. We'll share the stuff you have mentioned, some links to your website, Barband, but also to your LinkedIn profile, of course, so people will know where to find you. Is there anything you would like to add as a final say to us here on the podcast?
Oh, that was great. Thanks so much for having me on, and to the listeners, you know, I love connecting with other digital marketers and talking shops, so always happy to do so. If you're interested.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Marketing Technology Podcast. If you enjoyed this podcast, please leave us a review on iTunes and subscribe to our iTunes channel. Also, if you want to be interviewed on this podcast, or if you have any questions on marketing technology, send me an email on e.crum@marketingguys.nl. Thank you.